This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler, visiting with my colleague and friend and mentor, Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs, just returned from Australia, and I take him immediately to Europe. Headlines, Reuters, in hours. German cabinet passes bill for voluntary military service. This has to do with the pledges made at The Hague, the meeting in July, by the principals of NATO that they will devote percentages of their GDP to defense, to building the armaments, recruiting the soldiers, and deploying the units that are necessary to call it at least Europe participating in confronting the Russian Federation is the story. Germany's cabinet passed a draft bill that would introduce a voluntary military service as the country seeks to bolster national defenses over Russian security concerns is the headline. Gregory, quite contravening to this positive about we're going to fulfill our obligations to NATO, I go through three governments that are in trouble. One in Berlin, one in Paris, one in London. First, Berlin. Friedrich Merz, the new chancellor, made a remark to his own party. I believe he was in Lower Saxony. And he told his own party that in order to pay for the defense that we've pledged to defend Europe, we must cut back the social welfare generosity that have shaped German government since the Second War. Chiefly, he's talking about the promises that the German government, Social Democrat or CDU, make for retirement, for health, for job security. And those must be cut back, he said. Very unpopular, you can guess, chiefly unpopular to the Alternative for Deutschland, the populist party rising in East Germany, as you know, that is anti-EU, anti-NATO, anti-America times 10, and not anti-Russian. That's AFD. We moved to Paris. Within these last hours, the headlines show that the government chosen by Mr. Macron, the prime minister who's been holding the government together, is failing to the point of Mr. Macron is said to have three choices. One, name a new prime minister, try again. Two, call a snap election. And three, Macron resign. And they go to the big picture. The reason none of those are appetizing is that Marine Le Pen's national rally stands to gather up success no matter which way the president goes. He can stall this for a little while longer with a new prime minister, but that doesn't get the budget passed. Okay, now we go to the UK. Nigel Farage represents Reform UK, which is his new party, and it has maybe five or six members. I don't know, I lost count. They keep recruiting from the Tories. Not many members in Parliament. However, the polling shows that Nigel Farage's Reform UK enjoys 28% of the population compared to 20 of Labour, which has an overwhelming majority, compared to 17 for Tories, who are the rest of the story. Meaning if there's an election in Britain anytime soon, Nigel Farage is the prime minister. And Nigel Farage is not anti-EU, not anti-NATO, not anti-American. He doesn't really speak of those matters. He speaks of migration. And the remarks that he made to his own party in a gathering were reverberating across the country. One, if you arrive in Great Britain without documentation, you will be deported. And if you are deported, you will never be permitted back in the UK again, to huge applause. Three governments, not one of them speaking in continuing the pledges made at NATO at The Hague. You take my point, Jeff Gregory. Britain is turning, France is turning, Germany's turning away from the Ukraine story entirely. Is this presumption on my part accurate, and is it sustainable?
It's accurate and sustainable. You have three very weak governments in the countries you mentioned, but all of them with electoral or legal mandates to stay in power for another 1, 2, 3 years, 4 years in the case of Britain, another 4 years. So bringing down the governments, you know, or the presidencies in, or the leadership, head of government leadership in those countries is going to be difficult. Let's start with Germany. I mean, that's the most, probably the most fragile of the lot. The new bill which is being talked about to have a voluntary registration for military service is ambiguous. That's not conscription. Conscription is forced military service for a duration. And if you say voluntary military service, well, what does that mean? If people wanted to join today or yesterday, they could have done so. But I'm not sure what the new act entails. It seems more symbolic than actually something constructive. Yes, they're going to have to cut back on social spending if they're going to have increased security spending, but they need to cut back on social spending anyway, because that is what is encouraging illegal immigration. It's encouraging this massive non-German sector of the population from draining off the resources of the country. They're also going to have to get back to a viable energy production if they're to maintain their industry. So Chancellor Merz is in dire straits. He may not survive this in the long term or the medium term. In France, slightly different, because I don't think President Macron will resign. Yes, he may call for new elections and or appoint a new prime minister for parliament, but he won't call for new elections for the presidency by stepping down. He's also put in place a number of measures to ensure that the Rally National, the National Front leader, National Rally leadership, can't get in. Marine Le Pen can't get into the presidency easily, or to become head of government in the parliament. So he's tried to put a number of poison pills in place to preserve his position, but the country is not buying it. They're going through a period of great instability, riots and protests and the like. And meanwhile, the national economy is failing. In Britain, the prime minister has sufficient majority in parliament that he can't be thrown out, despite the fact that Nigel Farage's party is now in the leadership and has been wiping the floor of all the other parties in the local and county and regional elections, which haven't been cancelled. The government of Keir Starmer has tried to cancel most of the regional elections in Britain simply to stop the momentum for the Reform Party of Nigel Farage. So, yes, the momentum is building up there, but it'll take a while before we see the Reform Party government take office. So we've got a few more years of crisis in all those countries. In the meantime, the anti-EU countries, particularly Italy, Hungary, and now we see even to a degree Poland, Netherlands, Denmark, and the like, they're all attempting to, if you like, hold the line against Brussels. Now, Nigel Farage, who you mentioned was not anti-US or anti-NATO, but he is, to a degree, a high degree, anti-European Union, because he was the one who forced the debate and the referendum which led Britain out of the European Union. And he says, quite rightly, that the European Union is providing a communistic-like layer of extra management over Europe and basically causing it to become economically non-viable and causing a lot of other problems, such as these immigration situations and the European Court on Human Rights, which is a very, shall we say, political organization. And he's supported by the Prime Minister of Hungary, Mr. Orban, who basically says that that Brussels has been using these instruments like the ECHR, the Court of Human Rights, and other EU bodies to essentially promote a left-wing political agenda. So you've got this whole dissent throughout Europe, which, of course, is impacting economic growth. It's impacting national unity in all of the countries, except where it's can be motivated against Brussels. So it's a crisis in Europe. We see a number of heads of government, like Starmer, like Macron and the like, coming out with populist statements. The opposition is not populist in the same sense. They are, if you like, just strongly nationalistic and anti-war.
Let's come to Ukraine then, the presenting issue that gathered at the White House some days before and the meeting at the table, including Giorgia Meloni. Mr. Starmer, Mr. Macron, Mr. Merz. The President of the United States is persuasive in that the continuation of the fighting in Ukraine is not helping anybody in Europe, and they're all for it, but they don't seem to be taking any actions that'll settle it. One of the ways to settle it is to pressure Ukraine to negotiate, and to negotiate by giving the Kremlin what it wants, which is Donbass. Now, I don't know that Mr. Starmer, Mr. Macron, and Mr. Merz are going to do that. If not, why not? They've got trouble at home, and they could satisfy a lot of opposition by settling Ukraine.
Well, they could, theoretically, but they'd have to back down a lot, which means, again, loss of face. And also, they benefit by appearing to be champions of freedom and democracy and the like by supporting Ukraine. And that's a mistake. Similarly, they're, for example, all of them basically supporting the, quote, two-state solution in Israel, which is another great fallacy. The Australian Prime Minister is the same. They say they recognize a two-state solution in Israel, except that the Palestinians don't recognize a two-state solution. They want a one-state solution, which means that Israel disappears. So, you know, what the foreign leaders are saying, which sounds terribly reasonable, and we're supporting, you know, the state for Palestine, a state for Israel, we're supporting justice for Ukraine. All of these things sound great in theory, but they're not likely to be accepted by the people on the ground. So essentially, these governments, which have great domestic problems, particularly France, Britain, and Germany in particular, they've got all these issues which they're championing, but they're not taking care of business at home. So all of these things are foreign distractions. And look, we've seen that in the United States in the past. We saw President Biden championing Ukraine and, in a sense, forcing the continuation of the war against Russia simply because he needed a foreign war to look as though he was doing something. And that's always been, as Miles Copeland, the former CIA guy and author, said, American foreign policy is U.S. domestic policy carried out abroad. In other words, you do something abroad to get a feedback into your domestic electorate. And that's what we see with all these other leaders doing the same thing, looking statesmanlike abroad while not dealing with problems at home.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs, just back from his native Australia, where he participated in book launches for Noble Cause. When we come back, King Charles III Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.